In this session, we will look at some of the more common adjustments that traders may need to make to their accounting profits for tax purposes. We will start with pre-trading expenses. Expenses incurred in the 7 years before commencement of trade are treated as incurred on the first day of trading. Such expenses will be deducted from profits in the first accounting period, provided they are allowable under normal rules. Costs incurred by a trader in providing business entertaining are disallowed for tax purposes. Business entertaining means providing hospitality of any kind. However, costs incurred by an employer in providing entertainment for members of staff is specifically allowable. Business gifts are also generally disallowed unless the assets gifted cost under £50 and the gift bears the business name, logo, or a clear advertisement, and the gift does not include food, drink, or tobacco. Gifts of items which it is the taxpayer's trade to provide, for example, trade samples, etc., are allowed. Businesses regularly borrow money and will therefore pay interest on those loans. Provided the loan is taken out for a business purpose, for example, to buy stock, to pay staff wages, or to buy an asset to be used in the trade, any interest payments will be allowable expenses for tax purposes. This will include overdraft interest, providing the account is a genuine business account and is not used to fund personal expenses. Where the loan is taken out for a mixed purpose, for example, to buy a car where the car is used for both business and personal use, only the business proportion of the interest is allowed. No deduction is allowed for the repayment of the capital part of the loan itself. Monthly loan repayments will therefore need to be split between the interest and the capital repayment elements. No deduction is available for interest on overdue tax, as this is not an expense incurred in the course of making profits. Incidental costs of obtaining loan finance, for example, loan arrangement fees, etc., are specifically allowed. Turning now to assets bought under hire purchase agreements. If an asset, for example, a machine or car, etc., is acquired via a hire purchase agreement, legal ownership of the asset passes to the trader at the date the contract is signed. The trader will simply pay for the asset over a period of time, normally on a monthly basis. Monthly hire purchase repayments will contain both an interest and a capital repayment element. The capital element is not an allowable deduction. The interest is a deductible expense, subject to apportionment if the asset is also used privately by the trader. Capital allowances may be claimed on the capital cost of the asset from the date the hire purchase contract was signed. We will look at capital allowances in a later session. Contrast a hire purchase agreement with a leasing arrangement whereby a trader is borrowing an asset owned by someone else. Costs incurred in leasing or hiring an asset to be used in the trade will be allowable deductions. There are two ways in which a trader will lease an asset. First, the trader may take out an operating lease. Here, the trader simply pays a rental payment, normally monthly, to the owner of the asset, and then deducts the lease payments via the profit and loss account. The other way to lease an asset is under a finance lease. Under Statement of Accounting Practice 21, the leasee, i.e. the trader, is required to treat a finance lease in the same way as had he bought the asset by way of a loan. The trader will therefore depreciate the asset over its normal life and will therefore charge depreciation and interest payments through the profit and loss account. In both instances, the asset is being borrowed from someone else, i.e. no legal ownership changes hands, so no capital allowances can be claimed. There is therefore a difference between an operating lease and a finance lease in respect of what will be charged to the profit and loss account. Under an operating lease, only the lease rentals are deducted in the accounts. Under a finance lease, the profit and loss account will show deductions for depreciation and interest payments. In both instances, the amount charged to the profit and loss account is an allowable expense for tax purposes. Therefore, where an asset is held by a trader under the terms of a finance lease, the depreciation element is an allowable deduction. This is the only time that a trader will get a tax deduction for depreciation. Having described the correct tax treatment for both operating and finance leases, we now need to consider the treatment of long funding leases, which are leases lasting more than 5 years. The long funding rules cover both operating and finance leases. In summary, it is the lessee or person using the asset rather than the lessor, the person who owns the asset, who is treated as having incurred the capital expenditure when the lease started. The lessee is treated as if they own the asset throughout the duration of the lease, and so it is the lessee who is entitled to claim the capital allowances for both operating and finance long funding leases. Because capital allowances are being claimed by the lessee, any depreciation charge made in the accounts in respect of a long funding lease is disallowed and must be added back for tax purposes. In addition to the capital allowances that he claims, the lessee can also deduct part of any rental payments that he makes. For expensive cars leased before the 6th of April 2009, HMRC do not give full relief for the leasing costs of expensive cars. An expensive car in this context is a car with a retail price, when new, of more than £12,000. In this instance, the allowable element of the leasing costs is given by the formula on your screen. The allowable deduction is given by £12,000 plus P divided by 2P, where P is the retail price of the car when new. The restriction does not apply to the leasing of cars which are electrically propelled or which have carbon dioxide emissions less than 110 grams per kilometre. This was 120 grams per kilometre for hire contracts entered into before the 1st of April 2008. For new leases starting from the 6th of April 2009, those rules cease to apply. However, existing leases continue to apply these rules until the lease expires. By way of an illustration, Tarek is self-employed. He uses a Mercedes car under the terms of a finance lease which started on the 1st of January 2009. The amounts charged to the profit and loss account are as per the screen. Finance lease interest is £2,800 and finance lease depreciation is £3,200, so a total of £6,000 is charged to the profit and loss account. The Mercedes had a list price of £30,000. Tarek's business use of the car is agreed with HMRC at 75%. We need to work out the amount to be added back to trading profits. The amount to be adjusted in the trader's accounts is as follows. £6,000 is deducted in the accounts. The amount allowed as a tax deduction is £6,000 multiplied by £12,000 plus P over 2P, where P is £30,000. This gives an allowable amount of £4,200. However, Tarek uses the car 75% of the time for business purposes, so the deductible amount is 75% of £4,200, being £3,150. As £6,000 has been deducted in the accounts, the disallowable element is £2,850, and this should be added back to taxable profits. From the 6th of April 2009, the emphasis moves from the cost of the car to its carbon dioxide emissions. For new leases taken out from the 6th of April 2009, relief is restricted for the leasing costs of high-emission cars rather than expensive cars. So, what is a high-emission car? It is a car with CO2 emissions exceeding 160 grams per kilometre. A flat rate disallowance of 15% of the leasing costs applies to cars with CO2 emissions exceeding 160 grams per kilometre. This means that the allowable element of the leasing costs is therefore 85% of the lease charge in P&L account. The restriction does not apply to the leasing of cars, which are either electrically propelled or low emission, or to the leasing of motorcycles. The disallowance will also not apply where the car is only available to the taxpayer for a period of no more than 45 days. Continuing the Tarek illustration, Tarek also leases an Audi car under the terms of a finance lease which started on the 1st of July 2010 for use by an employee. The amounts charged to the profit and loss account are as per the screen. Finance lease interest is £1,500 and finance lease depreciation is £2,100, so a total of £3,600 is charged to the profit and loss account. The Audi has CO2 emissions of 180 grams per kilometre. We need to work out the amount to be added back to trading profits. The amount to be adjusted in the trader's accounts is as follows. £3,600 is deducted in the accounts. The amount allowed as a tax deduction is £3,600 multiplied by 85%. This gives an allowable amount of £3,060. As £3,600 has been deducted in the accounts, the disallowable element is £540, and this should be added back to the taxable profits. There is no adjustment for private usage of the car by the employee, since the employee will be taxed to income tax on the employment income benefit. If Tarek, the sole trader, had used the Audi car instead of the employee using it, the allowable amount of £3,060 would have to be adjusted further for Tarek's private use, resulting in a larger add-back. Turning next to bad debts. Any bad debts written off in the year are deductible for tax purposes. Any specific bad debt provisions are also allowable. A specific provision is where the trader can match the debt with a specific debtor. However, if a trader makes a general bad debt provision, for example, he does not expect, say, 5% of his debtors to pay their bills, so he writes this sum off in the profit and loss account, this is not allowed. For trading income purposes, you should adjust for movements in the general bad debt provision. Therefore, you should add back any increases in the general provision, and you should deduct any decreases in the general provision. The above rules relate to trade debts only. If a trader writes off a money debt, for example a loan, this is not an allowable deduction, as it does not relate to the trade. Loans to employees which are written off will be allowable deductions, as they will effectively be treated as additional salary on which the employee will be subject to tax under the employment income rules. Accountancy fees for the preparation of business accounts or for the completion of the self-employed pages of the trader's tax return are allowable expenses. However, HMRC will not allow a deduction for the cost of preparing an individual's personal tax return, i.e., for the pages which relate to his investment income, capital gains, claims for release, etc. This is because the cost is being incurred in the individual's personal capacity as a taxpayer rather than in his capacity as a trader. Therefore, such costs do not relate specifically to the trade. It is therefore common practice for accountants to split their bills between work relating to the client's trade and for work relating to his personal affairs. Accountancy fees incurred in dealing with a tax inquiry are usually disallowable. However, HMRC has issued a statement of practice stating that if the inquiry relates specifically to the trading income and as a result of the inquiry no additional profits are brought within the charge to tax, any costs incurred in dealing with that inquiry will be allowed for tax purposes. Termination payments are payments made to staff on cessation of their employment contract. In a continuing trade, a full deduction for termination payments made to staff is given as these expenses will have been incurred wholly and exclusively for the purposes of the trade. This is because redundancy payments need to be made to ex-employees in order to retain the support and motivation of the remainder of the staff. However, on the cessation of trade, we cannot argue that the redundancy expense will be incurred wholly and exclusively for the purpose of the trade, because there will no longer be a trade. However, employment law may specifically require the employer to make redundancy payments. Thus, the legislation allows a deduction for statutory redundancy payments made to members of staff on cessation of the trade. If the business wants to be more generous and pay amounts in excess of statutory redundancy levels, a deduction is available. However, relief is limited to 3 times the statutory redundancy level. Therefore, when a business is ceasing, it can, in total, obtain a deduction for termination payments up to 4 times the statutory amount, once under the statutory rules and 3 more times under the special rules in Section 79. Restrictive covenant payments, i.e. payments made to former staff to, say, stop them competing or joining a direct competitor, are always allowed. Costs of travelling from home to the normal place of work are not allowed as a deductible expense for self-employed individuals, as they are not incurred for the purposes of the trade. Other business travel expenses are allowable. The reimbursement of an employee's home-to-work expenses will be an allowable expense, although it may give rise to a taxable benefit for the employee. Subsistence costs are not generally allowable. As a general rule, expenses must be incurred in the process of making profits, not in the course of having lunch. In Kiley-Bott and Quinn from 1993, a subcontractor claimed a deduction for additional costs of lunches whilst working away from home. The claim failed, as the court held that the expenses were not wholly and exclusively for the purpose of the trade. This concludes the first part of this lecture on common adjustments.